Whether you like it or not, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the monthly Lunch and Learn Business Halacha discussion. So, like we already started speaking, today's topic, I think, is very unique because I don't know if there's any secular law on this kind of topic. It's a little bit more of an ethical topic, more than like a monetary topic. However, it has a lot of attention in Jewish law, in the Shulchan Aruch. It's located in the Chayshah Mishpat, in the monetary laws volume. That's where it exists in the Torah law book, which shows us that it definitely can be discussed in a law firm. And I'll just discuss, I'll start with a story that happened to me not long ago, just to launch the subject. I have two spots in my driveway at home, two parking spots. And we have two vehicles. So by nature, people would pull in from work and pull into their driveway. I can't tell you why, but in North Miami Beach, a lot of homes, besides their driveway, there's also a piece of probably city-owned land that people make as a parking spot. I don't know why we parked it, but maybe we want to leave the driveway available for children to play in. I'm not sure, but somehow psychologically we tend to park there a lot, even when the driveway is available. It's just the fact. You can tell me why. So I'm pulling in from the Kollel or work, wherever I'm coming from, and I'm pulling into the spot of grass in front of the house, not in the driveway. As I'm pulling in, I see my rearview mirror. A good friend of mine is coming right behind me, and he pulls right into my driveway behind me. And he gets out of the vehicle. He's like, "You don't have to save that spot for me." He thinks I just did him, not worth a lot of money, but a favor. He's grateful to me, for showing that I respect it as a person, and I'm gonna go out of my way to give him a parking spot. In his mind, he's very grateful to me. Is it true? No. It never happened. I was already pulling into the other spot just by nature. Do I need to go and say, you know, buddy, I do like you as a friend. I love you. I'm happy that you're here. I'm glad that you're parked there. I didn't really do it for you. Or I could keep my mouth shut and keep him excited and move on in life. Make him feel good, right?
Make it take care of him.
Make it take care of him. Another story, as you mentioned, I made a Shalom Zachar not long ago, less than a year ago, a Shalom Zachar, a party, a Friday night party in honor of the birth of a child. So let's say the scenario goes that someone's wife gives birth, they're making a nice party Friday night in their house, and a regular weekend will have a regular bottle of scotch, nothing fancy, and when you make an event, especially the birth of a child, you spend a lot of money, or you'll get a gift, a bottle of Blue Label. So you had the bottle of Blue Label already for a week or a couple of days, and you have it in your house. You're going to open it Friday night. You're not going to open it Wednesday night or Thursday night because you just can't afford to drink it down and buy another one. It's not a bottle of drink on a regular occasion. And knock on the door, my friend, maybe the same guy with the vehicle, doesn't know anything about my event. He shows up to pay me a Friday afternoon visit and say, "Hey, what's going on? You know what? Let's open a Blue Label together." I go to the shelf, I pull it off, open it up, and I pour him a shot. He thinks I just spent $200-$300 on him. That's what he thinks. I don't open a Blue. I mean, I'm not the person that's known to open a Blue Label in the middle of nowhere. It's clear to him that I opened it for his sake.
That's more intentional.
Now, in reality, I would have never opened this bottle, even had he come to my house, had I not been making that event tonight. I would have saved the bottle for an event. I wouldn't open it. I wouldn't spend that money on him, although he's my friend. Again, do I need to notify him? You know, I honor you. I like you. I'm opening this in honor of you, but I really would not open it if I wouldn't be opening it anyway tonight. Another example. And a real story that just happened, Rabbi Marmer told me he got a phone call. Believe it or not, we're learning this topic. And it's not a common question that you'll get from somebody because it's just not at the front of our consciousness. But someone actually called him, he told me, with a story. He says, "I got this pair of flip-flop slippers and it didn't fit, whatever it was. In other words, it was cheap. It was Walmart, Amazon, a cheap pair of slippers. And without thinking, his friend was making some kind of not major event with a birthday party for a kid or some low-class event at home. And he brought it along with him. He knew his friend loved slippers. It would fit him. And he would appreciate a pair of flip-flops. Again, not a major gift, but something small. He brought it along and gave it to his friend. And he went home. When he gets home, it occurs to him that pair of flip-flops, I don't know the name, let's call it Gucci. It was a knockoff, a copy of a really fancy company that's worth a lot of money. Let's just say it cost $150 for a pair of flip-flops, and you could buy one for a lot of money. It's like Gucci. And he knows his friend really appreciates these high-end companies. So he's like, oh my gosh, he just thought that I gave him, he has no idea it's fake. I mean, they do a good job copying them, and he has no idea. I just gave him a pair of slippers that he thinks is a Gucci. He called, this is a true story, he called Rabbi Marmor. He's like, Rabbi, do I need to call him back and let him know that no, it's a $4.99 pair of flip-flops from Walmart or Amazon? True story. So all of these, the common theme of all these stories is we're not talking about actual money. We're talking about really, you could call it ethical. Now, there are more examples that do have to do with money, but again, it's not actual dollar bills. For example, one of the cases we'll see that the Gemara quotes is apparently leather from an animal that was slaughtered is a little bit better, maybe a higher quality than an animal that wasn't slaughtered, that just died. For some reason, the leather may have a little bit of a better quality to it. It's just a fact. You know, it's not the point, but it's a fact. So you cannot go and sell your friend a pair of leather shoes or leather slippers, telling you it's from a slaughtered animal, which in which reality it came from an animal that was not slaughtered. Now, it's important to point out that we're not talking about a story where it would actually make a real monetary difference. Because if it would, we heard a lot of other classes, that could be a real mekach. It could really undo the sale because I told you I'm selling you A and I sold you B. We're staying clear of that. We're gonna assume that in Jewish law, it's not enough of a difference to nullify the transaction. But what it's not enough of a money difference. It's just something that I know he'd rather. I know he'd rather the slaughtered animal's leather versus the non-slaughtered animal. And I'm just not telling him, and he'll never know the difference. So here already, we are dealing with a monetary, we're doing a transaction. I'm taking money from you and giving you a pair of shoes. So I'm taking money. And I'm hiding something from you. I'm taking money, having you think that you got the pair of shoes that was slaughtered. Really, it was a drop of a lesser quality of a hide of a leather. And again, it's not the kind that would render the sale null and void. It's just a difference that people care about, and I'm hiding from you. Again, now we're into the maybe ethical discussion. Should I disclose it just to be a truthful person? So these are a bunch of stories that this can happen every day if you're conscious, things that are going on that you're hiding from people. Now, the Gemara brings a lot of different stories and says they're forbidden. The first story that the Gemara introduces does have to do with sort of a transaction. It's talking about where Shmuel and his attendants took a, let's call it a ferry ride, some kind of boat that brought them from one place to another, crossed them the river or something. So Shmuel says to his attendants, please, can you pay the captain? Can you pay him? And his attendant paid him with a non-kosher hen. And Shmuel got upset because the captain knew they were Jewish. Apparently, it was expected that Jews only carry kosher food with them. And he said, you just gave them a hen, they think it's kosher, and it's really not kosher. Now, what's the difference? He's a non-Jew. He doesn't care about kosher. So what's the difference? The difference is, Rashi explained, and this is very important, when a non-Jew or someone that doesn't care about something sees that I went out of my way to give them kosher food, which maybe is more expensive or whatever the point is, even though they don't care for kosher, but they see I went out of their way for them and they're very appreciative for that. So the captain, being a non-Jew, which doesn't care if it's kosher, he'll eat it anyway, but he's like, this Jew really cares for me. He's going out of his way to give me his kosher food. Or he'll go slaughter a hen to give it to me, even though it's a lot more work and maybe more money. But again, in dollar cents, it doesn't make a difference. The captain's getting his payment anyway. That's the case which launches this whole discussion in the Gemara, where Shmuel says to his attendant, you can't do that. You have to notify them. You had to have notified them that it's not really kosher. Why? Because it's forbidden to steal the das, the minds of people. Maybe we could call it stealing someone's conscience. That's one case. Moving on to another case. Another case is going to your friend, pressuring him, please, can you come eat dinner with me? Friday night meal, Shabbos meal. And you're pressuring him again and again, please, please come. You know he's not coming for whatever reason because you know he's busy. But you want to show that you really like him and you care for him and you're really going anyway. No, no, please come. I really want you. I really want you. In reality, you know he's not coming. So what are you doing? You're putting on a show. You're making him believe that you care for him. Again, same thing. I'm stealing, so to speak, your conscience. You think that I really care for you, and I really don't in this specific case. I'm only doing this. I'm only pressuring you to come have dinner with me because I know you're not coming anyway.
Does it matter if you're doing it intentionally?
We'll see. That's exactly what we're going to see. All this, yes.
Your first case, you don't even know you're looking at me.
Exactly. It can make a very big difference. Yes, potentially. We'll see. It's exactly what we're here to discuss. Another case, and this is perhaps the main case that all the commentators discuss. The story is sort of like we said, the blue label, but the story of the Gemara was a barrel of wine. Back in the day, it was all barrels of wine. And a barrel of wine was full and sealed, and you didn't open it. It would start going bad after however long. It didn't stay fresh, and you only opened it when you're ready to sell it, to drink it. So here you have a wine merchant that's got a bunch of barrels of wine. And what they'll do is, once they sold a barrel to the wine seller for his store, then they would open it, and perhaps he would taste it, and purchase the whole barrel. He would take it with him, he would pour it into his jug, then he would go home and sell his wine. Then obviously you would open the barrel because he purchased it. So here you have someone that's got a bunch of closed barrels of wine, and he had just sold a store owner one barrel, which means he's about to open it. He's about to open it and give over the goods to the store owner. The story of where I was, in comes his friend, knocks on the door, came to visit. Let's open a barrel of wine. And if it's not being opened regardless, it's a big monetary loss. Right? And they'd open a barrel if you're not yet ready to open it. He knew he's opening it anyway for the guy that made the purchase. He knew later on today he's going to be opening it anyway. And he opened it for his friend, and that, says the Gemara, is forbidden. You can't do that. Because he thinks you're ready to take a monetary loss to greet him and have a drink with him. In reality, it's not true. You're just opening it because you've already sold it. That's another case the Gemara says, forbidden, you cannot do. Okay? Another similar kind of case, just quoting a bunch of cases, just to kind of give a picture of how far this law extends. Someone is unfortunately lost a relative and he's mourning. In the Jewish law, it's 7 days. You know, we had a veil, 7 days, the week of mourning. And people come, obviously, to console the person that's mourning. So you come with a jug of oil. Again, back in the day, that was apparently a normal thing. Today, it'll be a box of burgers, maybe, or a platter of sushi. But the jug is empty, and you know that he's busy anyway. There's plenty of people, there's plenty of food. But when he sees you walk with a jug of oil, he feels indebted to you. Wow, you came to me with a jug of oil. You're willing to spend money to come comfort me. Excuse me. So that's another example where you're stealing his mind, his conscience. You are having him think that you're doing something for him, which you're really not. So putting all this together, the Gemara says forbidden, okay? Not allowed. What would you call it? Would you call it monetary law, ethical law? It's actually a big discussion, and there are various opinions. Some opinions go way back to say it's actually included, and when the Ten Commandments on the search of Dibros, when the tablets say don't steal, that we know is primarily talking about kidnapping, stealing people, but it's alluding to all kinds of theft, even this kind of theft of stealing one's mind, stealing one's conscience. It's really all included, and perhaps it's biblically forbidden as stealing. You're not allowed to steal money, and you can't steal someone's frame of mind. Maybe the attorneys have a better term for it. Steal someone's consciousness. You can't do that. It's forbidden. It's stealing. I'm stealing something from you, not money, but I'm stealing your, maybe Rashi will call it, I'm stealing your thank you. You feel a debt of gratitude to me that I don't deserve, and I'm taking that from you. I'm stealing. Others will say it may be stealing, but it's rabbinical. It's not biblical. Then there's other opinions that will say rabbinical or biblical, but it's not really sourced from stealing. It's sourced just from the concept of, like, we know, Midbar Sheker Teretz, like, stay far from lie. God doesn't like to lie. He likes when we're truthful. God is truthful. It says the chosen, the stamp of God is emes, it's true. God wants us to be truthful people. Going around doing these kind of things where people are totally misled by you, you're just not conducting yourself in a truthful way. And not only that, one of the Rabbin Yonah, one of the Rishonim, goes so far to say that to the rabbis, Geneva's das, stealing someone's conscience, someone's mind, is even worse in a sense than stealing money. You know, I got this thing, I wanted to steal, I stole $100 from you. It's terrible. But here, my entire being, I'm a living show. I'm just walking around not being truthful. It's my whole essence. I'm not a truthful person. I'm going around fooling people. It's a terrible thing. And point being is that whether it's biblical, rabbinical, stealing, ethical, it's very important. And we need to know the at least Jewish law about this. Again, I don't know if there's secular law, that dictate any such behavior.
I think secular law, fraud, you have to show damages. So
actual damage.
If it's not, even if somebody's a fraud to you, if there's no damages.
Okay. So that's why this is a unique.
What's considered damages?
Money.
Monetary loss.
Monetary loss.
Yeah. The most monetary loss?
That was caused by the deceit.
So again, most of our stories, all I have is a debt of gratitude. You didn't lose any money. I mean, I'm the one losing my bottle of blue label, but I don't care because I'm anybody opening it. But you're definitely not losing any money. You're only getting, you're happy. You see that I love you. On the contrary, that's why it's tricky. Because I'm actually giving you something that you're thankful for. But we're saying, no, it's forbidden because I'm really tricking you.
More a matter of ethics and ethical behavior.
Exactly.
It's enforceable.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's very important that it's really in the Shulchan Aruch.
But this is enforceable in Bezdin?
No. So, no. There's nothing to enforce. After, you know, you need to know this before the fact. After the fact, it's too late. There's really nothing to return. It's really
telling the truth.
Now, I'm quite sure that after the fact, there's no obligation to disclose. It's just a prohibition. But I'm not 100% sure. I would think it may depend on why we're not allowed to do this. If it's something, if it's like stealing. So there's a commandment to return money that you stole. No commandment to return and take anything physical. But perhaps if it's conducting yourself with truth, so every time I see you, you're still indebted to me. So maybe I need to stop that. Because if I don't stop it, I'm continuously living situation that you're indebted to me, and maybe I'm responsible to stop that. I'm not sure, but it seems like there's no responsibility to actually get anything back. Now,
the responsibility is to put yourself in a position that you can do the favor.
Well, in most of these stories, the responsibility would be for me to tell you, it's great to see
you. No, you don't need to tell. If you think that he owes you a favor and he doesn't return, it's damaging to him. The expression is, what did I do good for you that you are so nice to me? When you do good for people,
he feels like he wants to give me back?
First, he feels like he wants to give back. Psychology works. First, he feels that he wants to give back. But the opportunity doesn't come up. So he starts excusing, you know. Really, okay, I didn't have opportunity. And really, the reason I didn't return the favor, because he's no good. That's how psychology works.
Yeah.
That's what Rosh Yeshiva told me. I don't know. Okay.
Interesting.
That's how psychology works. Okay. So whenever you do a favor to somebody, and even if it's not true favor, you need to work on putting yourself in a situation that he can return the favor.
Okay, so that would be step number two. Let me make sure I give him opportunity to do me a favor. So when he makes his shalom zachar, his party, I should go there and give him the opportunity maybe to pay me back. Okay, fine. But we're holding my step number one. Do I need to tell him? Do I need to have my conscience to tell him, let them drink, but by the way, I'm opening it anyway. Do I need to say that in advance? So here we have all these stories, these cases that the Gemara says is forbidden. You're not allowed to go ahead and open the bottle without disclosing that you're not doing it for him. There's a number of ways that this is permitted that the Gemara brings down. I don't want to go through them one by one, and then we could try to put them into all our stories, or someone could think of another interesting kind of case to apply this to it would be great. So the first, or one of the big ways to get out of this, the Gemara says, is if I can tell you that it wasn't I that tricked him, that he fooled himself. Now, I want to talk about this a lot, but let's just talk about the case that the Gemara gives, and then we could maybe expound on that. If I can say with certainty that it wasn't I that was fooling him, it's all he did it for himself. The example of the Gemara story is that you had a great rabbi, Mar Zutra, the son of Nachman. A great rabbi is walking on the way outside of the city. All of a sudden, he notices two rabbis walking in his direction. Okay? What does that mean to him? To him, it clearly displays that they came to greet him, which is a great honor. They came out of the city down the road to greet him. So says the Gemara, again, there's Mar Zutra, the great rabbi, coming on the way. And then he bumps into two other rabbis, Rava and Rav Safra. And they encounter each other. So Mar Zutra comments, Mar Zutra says as follows. He says, why did the rabbis have to go so much out of the way to greet me? In other words, he was appreciating that they came to greet him. He assumed they came to greet him, and he was actually saying, maybe sarcastically, maybe not, but it's okay, rabbis, you don't need to come out so far to greet me. So they turned to each other, and Rav Nachman told, Rav Nachman responded and said, Rabbi, we weren't coming to meet you. We were traveling anyway, which was the truth. They were regardless traveling. They were not coming to greet him. They didn't even know he was coming. So Rav Nachman says, it's okay, we weren't coming special, but we were coming anyway. So Rabbi turns to him and says, why did you say that? Let him think that we're coming to greet him. To which he responds, I can't do that. Gnev his das, I'm stealing his conscience. He thinks we're out to greet him. In reality, it's not true. So if we kept quiet and allowed him to continue thinking that we came out to greet him, again, another story where we're taking his debt of gratitude, we're taking his akaras hatov, we're taking his thank you, and we're stealing it. So we got to tell him that we did not come to greet him. That's the story of the Gemara. Here, the Gemara says, not a problem. You know why? Because there's no reason for Mar Zutra, the first rabbi, to think they came to greet him. People walk down the street all the time. So they didn't set him up for this mistake. It wasn't them that fooled him. In the Gemara's terms, Ihu de Kamati Nafshe. He fooled himself. He fabricated a story in his mind. Oh, look, they came to greet me. He had reasons to. You know, it wasn't far-fetched. But at the end of the day, it was all him. He fabricated it. Then says the Gemara, I can keep quiet. I don't have to stop you from fabricating things in your mind, which would result in you giving me a thank you even, if I have nothing to do with it. I'm just a piece of the puzzle. They're walking down the street. He happens to have met them. He fabricated that they came to greet him and honor him. Says the Gemara, that would be okay.
You don't have to, or it's better not to? Like, is it still like mitzvah spasidus to point it out that, you know?
I don't know the answer. If it's 100% permitted, would it be above the letter of the law? Would it be a good thing to disclose not? It's probably truthful. But maybe what you said before, maybe let him be excited. So I don't know what would win. I leave that up to you. I don't know what would win. Me to be truthful, go out of my way, or keep you excited. I'm not sure. That's a good point. I don't know the answer. Now, that being said, this leniency, we don't hold like this. The most lenient opinion, which is Rashi, he comments on the Gemara. He says, really? If you're tricking yourself, I don't have to stop you. Say, how come in the case of the barrel that we had earlier in the Gemara, why did I have to tell him that I'm not opening it for him? I'm opening it anyway. Why do I have to say anything? He's tricking himself. He thinks I'm opening the barrel for him. That's what Rashi asks. Rashi says, you're right. The story of the barrel was that he actually told him, I'm opening this barrel in your sake. And that's why it was forbidden. Because he was setting him up. Had he kept quiet, Rashi says it's totally forbidden. It's totally permitted, I'm sorry. So according to this, is the most lenient opinion. We don't hold like this. We don't hold like this. And Shulchan Aruch, we don't pass like this. But Rashi's opinion is, it's only forbidden to steal someone's das, conscious, if you're actively going ahead and doing it, which usually would mean speaking up and saying, I'm opening this barrel, it's great to see you, and let me open this and honor you. Or maybe if you don't speak it out, if you do something that clearly displays, clearly that you're doing it for him, that would also be a way that it's forbidden. But otherwise, it's always forbidden, according to Rashi. So if you look at all our stories, my story with the guy in the parking spot. I mean, I don't have to say anything in front of Raj Shapiro. He fabricated this concept that I left him a parking spot. I don't have to do anything. The case of the blue label, I'm opening it up. As long as I don't tell him I'm opening it for him. I can open it, give him a shot. A court to
actually
be fine.
If you're such a good friend, you'd also assume that you're just celebrating early.
That's also true. So that's the technicality. I'm making believe he did not know that I'm even making the event tonight. He didn't even know that. But you're right. That is a true point. So in all this, the cases, the story with the flip-flops, again, according to this Raji, there's no problem whatsoever because I didn't say, hey, here's a pair of Gucci flip-flops. I know you appreciate it. There you go. I didn't do that. According to Raji, it's all permitted. Okay, we don't go with this. I just want to bring out the point, the most extreme opinion that the Raji said.
Well, that is a little bit of an interesting example because if you give someone like a fake brand, like you are basically, even without like affirmatively saying it, you're saying like, they're not going to assume, oh, it's like a fake knockoff version of the brand.
You know, you're 100% right. No, I take that back. You're right. And I was just thinking about this earlier today, and I agree. I retract. When you hand a pair of Gucci's, you're right.
Wow, I've never
convinced
someone
hand...
so quickly to retract.
No,
I
mean, it's a good point. We'll delete that part of the video. It's a good point. No, even if you don't say, if you hand someone a Gucci, and you go over to the house and give it to him, you're right. That'll be the same as, here, I'm honoring you. You're right, 100%. I agree. Yes, thank you for that. So in that case, that would be included in this problem according to Russia. Yes, 100%. But the case of opening the bottle of blue label, the case of the Gemara opening the barrel, all that's permitted if you keep your mouth shut, you don't say anything. Okay? Let's move on to the, let's call it the opinion that we actually do go by. Tosis's opinion, we do go by. And Tosis says, no, don't tell me that when the Gemara told me that you're not allowed to open the barrel, it was only talking about where I specifically told it. It doesn't seem to be saying that in the Gemara. It seems like even if my mouth is shut and I'm just opening it with him, it's forbidden. And therefore, the way Tosis explains, and again, we're trying to figure out, on the one hand, the Gemara told us that when he fooled himself, it's permitted. So we're asking, by the barrel, I didn't say anything. He fooled himself by peeking and opening it for him. So that's twice. It really depends on what's going on in this situation. Is he in a situation where he should have realized I'm not doing this for him or not? What's the situation? Every situation is going to be different. The case of the barrel in the Gemara, someone knocks on the door, walks in, you open a barrel for him. Normal circumstances would indicate that it's not something that's already been sold that I'm opening tonight. Under normal circumstances, most people should be thinking that you're opening up with them. That's just let's call it the default situation. The default scenario is, if everyone keeps their mouth shut, if you're watching a video screen on mute and don't hear anything, you see the door open, someone comes in, you go open the barrel. It's pretty clear from the setup that you're doing it for him. So that's forbidden. Again, he's not fabricating something in his own mind. He's not fabricating something. He has all the rights to assume that. Whereas the story in the Gemara, where they're traveling on the road and he came to greet them, over there, nothing indicated that they came to greet him. It was a total fabrication. It makes 100% sense, but there's zero indication. People are on the road all the time. Nothing about the setup tells him that I came to greet him. There we say, you made up the story, you fabricated it. You have no reasons to think one way or the other. You have no reasons to think we're coming to greet you. How are we supposed to know you're coming? Nothing shows us that's important to us. So again, let's go back to all of our stories. Certainly the case of the flip-flops, he has all reason to think that I'm giving him a pair of Gucci. I'm knocking on his door with a pair of Gucci, so that would definitely be forbidden because he's not fabricating it. I'm leading him to think I'm doing something for him. My case of the driveway, this is going to get tricky, but let's just think about it for a second. I mean, you really have to know how normal it is for people to park in the front of the driveway, but I could definitely hear someone argue and say, people park in driveways. Why'd you specifically not park in the driveway? Right when I'm coming, it was pretty clearly indication that I'm saving it for him. But you'll say, how did he know that I knew he was there? He was driving behind me. So it really depends how the scenario is set up.
People leave the driveway open for the kids to play. It's not,
the kids to play.
So crazy.
Okay, so according to what Camille is saying,
you could do both.
Okay, so let's assume he's right. Let's assume Miramila is correct, and there's absolutely no one way or another when it comes to your driveway. You could park there or park in the grass. There's absolutely no difference. So by him thinking that I left it open for him, he fabricated it. I didn't do anything that would push him to make that decision. And you'd be correct. If you'd be perhaps in a upper scale neighborhood, maybe that nobody parks in the grass, and the grass is really nice with flowers, and I park there, which is clearly indicating I'm trying to save in the parking spot, so then maybe in that case would be forbidden.
You know that this guy is coming?
I have no idea. No.
Well, he's coming to your house?
He comes a lot. He comes a lot. He comes to visit a couple times a week. Yes. And he parks a lot of times on the grass when I'm in the driveway, but happened to be right after I pulled up, he pulled up. You could also argue and say he was behind me. So why did he think that I knew he was coming? That would be a good argument. You know, he was behind me. So who told him that I knew he's coming? He definitely fabricated it and was permitted. So you could perhaps say that then if you're comfortable assuming that that's a strong
idea. You didn't do anything to lead it. It's different than the case where you're giving a gift. You're doing something. You're doing something directly.
Yeah, that's like speaking. I think he's right. What's your name?
David.
I think David's right. That's identical to speaking, to saying I'm doing it for you. But here,
you're living your life, you're doing right. Your thing. And he's interpreting what you're doing for your own actions for yourself. And Rorschach's in, he's interpreting them as you're doing it for him.
So you think it's all on him?
He's not making. He's
making it up.
He's trying to put the whole thing in his head, right?
He's dreaming up in his head.
I'm thinking that the case you're giving him the.
Yes, 100%. I agree with you. So we're probably comfortable to assume that my case of the driveway, we can blame it on him, it's his fabrication. But now comes another opinion, and this is the best opinion, and I'll introduce this opinion with another story. The story goes that, and I don't know if a friend or an acquaintance is getting married. He's not your good friend. You're not going to the wedding necessarily. But if the wedding would be down the block, you would go. He's enough of a friend and acquaintance that you'd go. So here you have this person making a wedding a half hour out of town, right? Or an hour. You definitely would not travel to this person's wedding. You would happen to be going in that direction for whatever reason. You have to give a business halakha share in Fort Lauderdale. So you're going to Fort Lauderdale, but you're going there anyway. Oh, and the wedding is down the block. So you say to yourself, let me go. Wish him out of the let me go. Let me go into the wedding and stop by, for my sake. I'd like to go. He's a friend of mine. I'd like to say, but I would never travel. He's not that close of a friend. And if he sees me at the wedding, he definitely will. Again, we're talking about a scenario. He definitely will like be surprised and appreciate the fact that I travel, because he knows that we're not best friends. He won't come to my wedding either. It won't be down the block. So he's clearly shocked, and he gives me an extra debt of gratitude when he sees me at this wedding. Wow, you came all the way out here for me. Do I need to speak up? Or can I just... my pleasure, and enjoy the wedding. So again, let's just focus for a moment on what we have until now. According to the opinion we just discussed, Tosfos, he should be thinking that I came for him. Like, what else am I doing here? The scenario itself, default scenario, would seem like I came out of my way to his money. I'm not usually there. Everyone knows I'm not there. It's not a very common thing. So this setup is definitely like the case of the barrel of wine. Normally, my barrels are not about to be opened. And when you come to my door, we say that I'm fooling you, and you don't have to say, well, maybe he's opening anyway. It's not the normal scenario here, too. He doesn't have to say to himself, he doesn't necessarily automatically say to herself, oh, maybe my friends happen to have been in the neighborhood. People don't do that. It's not, it happens, but it's not very frequent. So the setup of the story was that he has all the rights, let's call it, to assume I came for him. And he's given me that gratitude, which is forbidden. Comes along the Ron. The Ron takes this a step further. And he says, no. He says, in the case of the barrel of wine, let's imagine I was opening it before the knock on the door. I'm sitting here opening a barrel of wine. For myself. As I'm opening it, the knock on the door, friend walks in. And I continue opening it. in reality, am I doing it for him? I'm doing it for myself. Even had he not come, I would be doing it. Now, according to Christ, I don't care. I'm right now doing something that's leading him to think I'm doing him a favor. He's going to owe me a debt of gratitude. I can't do that. I need to stop my tracks and say, by the way, I'm opening a barrel, and I'm great to share it with you. I was opening it anyway. According to Christ, you have to do that, because if not, you are actively doing something, stealing his mind, his conscience. But the Rosh says, no, no, no. If I'm doing it anyhow, if I'm doing it regardless, permit it. It's only forbidden to do something, steal someone's conscience, if you're doing it to get him, to fool him. That's what the Torah says, don't fool people. I'm not fooling anyone. I'm opening a barrel of wine. Now you walk in, I don't have to start changing the world. I can continue doing what I'm doing as long as I'm not actually trying to fool you. So the case of the wedding, I'm not trying to fool anybody. I'd like to stop in and congratulate you at your wedding. I'm not trying to fool you. Now, it's automatically going to create a scenario that you think I came for you and you're giving me a debt of gratitude. I don't deserve it. It doesn't matter, according to the Rosh, because I'm not sitting here trying to get you. I'm not trying to fool you. The case of the wine, it depends. If I was not opening it until tonight, when the wine seller comes to get us wine, I was not opening it. You walked in, oh, let me open it. So now I'm fooling you. I'm opening it for you, because without you, I wouldn't open it. So here I am actually fooling you. Again, it's not so crazy, but I'm fooling you. I'm doing something I wouldn't have done because you showed up at my door. I'm doing something to make you think that I really care for you.
You also go to the wedding for him.
There, the wedding, I'm there anyway for a business, for my share. I didn't go for him.
You weren't going to go to the wedding.
But the point is like this. Let me say more precisely. My intention is not to make him think I slept out for him.
And by the wine?
By the wine, obviously what I'm trying to do is make him think I'm opening a wine for him. Because if not, I would just tell him. I'm obviously trying to make believe I'm honoring him.
Oh, so you see, your mom was trying to... So
by the wine kiss, that's what I'm doing. Because if I couldn't care less, I would just tell him.
And by the wedding, it's the same thing. All this, what you're saying is all this based on the kavanah that, no?
By the
wedding, you're anyways going to honor him. The whole purpose is to honor him or to, you know,
why
celebrate.
Do you go to those weddings? So some you go to for the party, and some you go for because you're going to the Baal Simcha.
Right,
so
but
you shot them in their Simcha.
But you don't want them to be fooled and thinking you spent money to get there, even though you didn't. That's not your intention. By all means, you wouldn't have spent money to get there. You wouldn't have spent time to get there.
Time.
What?
But I'm saying that you have the same reason. You say, so tell him, I was here anyway, so I stopped it.
Do you have to? Is it forbidden not to?
Well, you don't want
to
say it because it kills the moment. And like, you're like, let the guy says hi, like, oh, you showed up to my wedding, you came all the way from New York to my wedding, and you tell him, oh yeah, I didn't really, I'm just...
So this is
the guy. You want to make him... That's gonna happen.
That's other point. You're asking that if the Torah says don't steal his conscience and tell him he didn't really come, you're asking that now he's gonna feel bad.
And you have a chiv to make him feel good. So
it's a neighbor's wedding,
you're bringing the guy when he sees you automatically he feels really good, right? Then all of a sudden
it's gonna have a counter effect, right? And you're saying that may be worse. Okay, so we'll have to propose this to the rabbis to get the psak. And you know what? Maybe you'll be correct that maybe we'll wait and we'll say, don't ruin this wedding night. I don't know. But let's focus just on the concept. Is there a prohibition on the table now? No.
What? It's not.
Based on the run, there's no prohibition because I'm not trying to fool them. I mean, intention not to fool them. And I'm just stepping because I'm here anyway. I just want to wish them well. But I don't know. That's keep that your point as a question mark. If it's going to be detrimental to his wedding night and he'll feel bad and he'll feel insulted, I don't know, because the truth is, there's not a whole concept in the same chapter in Shulchan Aruch called making people feel bad. And that's the bar, insulting people, which is terrible, and it's very strict. And there's a whole, maybe the next lunch will be about that, I don't know. But it is very important. So I don't know how these two things will actually, I don't know what the end result will be. But anyway.
Is the Rosh saying that it goes based on what the guy's conceived?
Seems like his intention, what he's trying to do. It just sounds like.
You have the same taste. It depends on his intentions, we'll make it up. He says
the Gemara story with the wine barrel. The story is the same. Your friend comes, you open the wine barrel. The Rosh says, if you would not have opened it without him coming, then it's forbidden to open it because you're making him think you're opening it for him. But if you're opening it anyway for yourself and he happens to walk in, you don't have to tell. So he's clearly telling me, am I here to get you? Am I doing something to fool you? Or I'm doing what I'm doing because I want to drink. And now you're showing up to the scene. I don't have to get involved. That's your life. I don't have to fix your life for you. I just can't steal it from you. That's the Ron's picture. Okay? So again, but the Tosis's picture is not as lenient as that. It's all based on how does the picture look? What's happening? Should he have realized that I'm not doing it for him? Then we say, okay, it's permitted. He fabricated his own story. Who told him that I came to greet him? He had no reasons to think permitted. In the situation of the wine, he had all the reasons to think I opened it for him because people don't open wine barrels. He walked in, I opened it. So according to that, even if I was opening it for myself, but if he walked in and now I'm in a situation where all arrows indicate that I'm opening it for him, I have to tell him that I'm not. Now, I'd like to, what are we holding time?
153.
53, yikes. So we're really over time, but I want to think of one fascinating thing because we can't go without this. There's a couple more things we don't have time for. But Rav Moshe Feinstein has a story where I'm out to get him, I'm out to fool him, but I'm still allowed to do it. Now listen to the story. The story is, and again, you know, figure out the details in your own mind, but apparently you have a piece of liver. When it's a week or two old, maybe the color changes a bit, it's not so red, and maybe it gets brown. Or I can definitely in my head picture with a piece of meat. It gets brown, it's not so red. So you have this piece of meat that you want to like dip in blood to make it look more fresh. It's really a week old, but it's perfect, but you want to make it look more fresh. Can I do that?
So that's the fruits.
So you would think I'm fooling him. What do you mean? I'm totally fooling him. I'm literally setting him up. I'm dipping it in the blood to make it look fresh. This is where you find a fascinating point, and this may be applicable to some cases. He says like this. He says, when you see a red piece of meat, a red piece of liver, you don't know it's fresh. If it's brown, you know it's not fresh. If it's red, you don't know it's fresh. And that, if you're a very picky person, you'll always ask the butcher, you know, was this from yesterday, from today, even if it's red. So red doesn't mean fresh. It means maybe fresh. Brown means not fresh.
Why does red mean not fresh?
Red means can be fresh, because if it would for sure be not fresh, it would be brown already. So red means it could be fresh.
Meaning it could be 3 days old, so it's not fresh, but it's not enough that...
You don't know, exactly. So now, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, here's a scenario where, no matter what, even if I specifically dip it in blood to make it look fresh, you are fooling yourself. You know why? Because if you really care about how the meat looks, how fresh it is, even if it's red, you would go ask the butcher. You didn't ask the butcher. That's your problem. I can even go do something with my hands to make you feel not needing to go speak to the butcher because there's nothing concrete. Even being red is not automatically fresh, and people that care about it would regardless speak to the butcher. So all I did was I took away your wanting in your mind to go speak to the butcher. That's your problem. And it's totally permitted. So again, this is it's a complicated scenario. I don't have a good example to apply it, but it's a case where what I'm doing is not changing anything clearly. If red is fresh or brown is not fresh, it's forbidden, and this we don't get to that yet, but this case is later on, Shavar, you can't do that. You can't take something old and make it look new, it's forbidden. Same kind of concept, you're fooling people. But if it's not concrete, if red is 50-50 and brown is not fresh, you can make it red to take away the person's wanting to go speak to the butcher.
So what
fascinating.
Does...
I don't know if everyone agrees to this, because maybe some will say that no, don't do anything to fool him. But such a bunch of fighting, it's totally permitted.
They do with oranges. I think they make them more orange, like the producers, because they come out sometimes green, but they... So I don't know if it would apply in this case, because they're doing it purposefully, but...
So Shulchan Aruch says, actually, you can't take something old and make it look new, but if it's new, you could...
Well, it's,
spiff it up to make it look even better because it's new and you're just making it look better. So now those oranges, I assume, are 100% new and fresh because that's what they're selling. There's just something on the outside that'll make someone want it better. So I would assume that's permitted because it's anyway 100% fresh. You're just spiffing it up to make people happier. So that's regardless permitted. Again, that's another point that we're going to get to yet, but that's also important. You can't change things. Just to throw in, you know, someone... son's being sold in the slave market, and he's an older person. He's got white hair, and he wants to dye his hair black. He'll be worth more money. That's another case you know what to do. Again, you're fooling somebody. You know, there's a lot of different cases where this could apply. Again, that's really a monetary thing. I'm paying money to get a slave. That's really a monetary.
So, according to Ramesha, if somebody went white prematurely, a 20-year-old with white hair, you'd be able to dye their hair because it's anyways.
Well, that maybe everyone would agree to because nothing happened.
You're not hiding the fact that he's old.
It's not a true thing. He thinks that I'm old and I'm not old. So
actually,
I don't know.
You're actually not doing any of the stuff by making it.
Yeah, I want that. That's an interesting point. And the truth is, there is an example that's similar to what you just spoke about. People give gifts, sets of sperm, sets of books. You know, when a boy turns bar mitzvah, you give him a set of books, sperm. So this return policy, you can't return after 2 months. I'm just speaking that, let's say. After 2 months, you can't return. Now, you have this boy, you got this gift, it's 3 months, he knows it didn't move. And again, the reason why they don't want you to return is because things got moved around and got banged around. It didn't move, it was still in the box on this pile in the corner from the event. It didn't move, it's the same as the day later. But the return policy says 2 months, it's really 3 months. Can he go return it and keep his mouth shut? So again, this would be similar to what you're saying, that I know that's what you want, the store you're getting. You're getting a brand new, untouched. Now, don't lie. Don't say, oh, I bought it only a month ago. Again, you can't lie. But just go return it and don't say anything, and hopefully they don't see the date on the receipt. And that would probably be okay because you're not doing anything. No one cares, no one knows, and no one lost any money. You're not taking debt of gratitude. You're not doing anything there. So that would perhaps be permitted.
It's really about the perspective of the other person.
Yes.
It doesn't mean it's not about what you're doing, it's about what he's going to receive. Because
it's really all about that. It's really all about that.
I'm saying that it's not about your intent, so it's not just.
Exactly. You can have the worst of intentions, but as long as on the table, you didn't take him from A to B, it's totally permitted. And again, it's baking on the heter he's using the Gemara's case that we're calling it, you fabricated it. No one told you anything is fresh. You want it fresh, ask the butcher. Again, we're blaming that on this heter, on this leniency of, we're calling that you fabricated it. That's how much just the wrong night.
Okay.
Anyone, I'm sure when you go home, within a couple of days, you'll realize that you've bumped into such a story. It happens daily, and your wife says, oh, thank you so much. And I'm like, you know what she's talking about? Oh, of course, you're very welcome. Right, it's no matter, maybe Shalom Bayis is mother. Maybe making your wife happy is permitted, but it happens wherever you turn, you're bumping into people, and it's just really good to have this conscious in your mind.
Thank you. Stop the recording.